Hello and welcome to Dialect. I'm Tony Gosling. Dialect is Bristol's first podcast, set up with a grant from the Scarman Trust in 2002 and goes out every Thursday morning at 11 a.m. here on BCFM 93.2. This week we have Elia Pablo's Tech Roundup and also Jason Yannakopoulos with his look at Private Eye. And of course the weekly What's On Guide and Song of the Week from Jeff Sparks. Dialect is produced by volunteers. If you want to join in, contact Volunteering Bristol, just off Queen's Square. You can call them on 0117 989 7733 and I'll repeat their contact details at the end of the show. But we start this week with Private Eye. And Jason, before you start, why Private Eye? What you do seem to really enjoy it. Is there anything that makes it different to other magazines?
Well, it's interesting on the grounds that it doesn't have any form of political bias and it will attack anyone and everyone, pretty much.
So that's balance. Do you think that we maybe don't get that sort of balance on TV, that mostly TV newspapers are biased one way or the other?
Well, let's put it this way. Yes.
Okay, all right, thank you. Anyway, so this, other than the plug for Private Eye, let's get down to brass tacks. You can't get away from the football, however hard you try. Even though I do try, I can tell you, to get away from it everywhere you switch. What's one of the things that's frustrated me is trying to listen to Five Live Drive in the afternoons, which is a rolling news programme, a sort of programme I used to work on years ago. And you can't get it. It's just football, 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 wall-to-wall football. David Beckham. So we're going to do more football now. David Beckham.
Well, David Beckham, this is interesting. It's David Beckham's, how do we put it, change of heart, shall we say. In 2011, after when reports of circulation of dodgy deals for the 2018-22 World Cup bids, David Beckham came up as saying, obviously something's wrong. When you look at the investigations and since the vote, some things have come out. There's so much said, but at the time you don't suspect there's something wrong. When people tell you that you've got your face... To your face that you've got their vote, you want to believe them. All of this leaves a sick feeling in my mouth. However, he doesn't seem to feel that way anymore. More recently, he said, I'm not into politics. I'm not going to comment. I was involved in the bidding process and we were all proud of our bid. We're obviously very disappointed not to win, but it's been decided now.
A bit of backtracking then. That's a bit naughty of him, isn't it, really? I mean, it sounds almost like someone's telling him, David, shut up.
Maybe it's due to the fact that in 2013, David Beckham was awarded a contract by Paris Saint-Germain, which just happens to be owned by Qatar Sports Investments.
Ah, so maybe he's taking a little bit of money from Qatar. What are your thoughts about this whole FIFA corruption business with Qatar then? Because, I mean, my view, and I'll tell you that before you start, is that we've had an attack on the Qataris. They're the people, of course, who run Al Jazeera Television from Qatar, the Qatari royal family. Al Jazeera Television is becoming quite a powerful force in the world, particularly since they opened their English language channel, and they seem to be able to sort of... You know, for example, in Ukraine, it's been one of the most, the only really balanced TV programs about what's been going on in Eastern Europe. Whereas, obviously, the US and the British networks and the European network, the Western European networks are very pro-Kiev. The Russian network, RT, is extremely anti-Kiev. Yet Al Jazeera has been one of the only people you can actually watch that's quite balanced. So I think, this is my two halfpence on this, that actually Qatari royal family, because of Al Jazeera, is coming under attack because what they're doing with their TV station is actually more powerful than standing armies.
Well, quite possible. I mean, as I say, the pen is mightier than the sword, or in this case it might be the microphone.
Or the camera.
Yeah,
that's right. So anyway, what's been going on with all this most recently then?
Well, actually, here we are. Strange but true, every one of the World Cup's 3 million ticket comes via a modest two-story office building in Cheadle Royal in South Manchester. The proprietors, Mexican brothers Jaime and Enrique Byram, chums of disgraced bribe taker and former FIFA president João Havelange, enjoyed exclusive World Cup ticket concessions for many years and now guarantee them for another decade under their latest deal with Sepp Blatter.
Oh, so hang on a minute. This Qatari corruption business is nothing new. Corruption's been swirling around FIFA for years. And I noticed as well last week in one of the newspapers, pictures of apparently sell-out games with big blocks of the stadium with only about three or four people in them. So they can't have been sell-out games.
Well, yeah, that's really interesting. As it points here, whether the tournament is hosted in Qatar, in America, who had also bid for it, or Australia, these Mexican brothers will be certain winners. Over the years, the Byron brothers have done a lot of business with FIFA, with corrupt former FIFA Vice President Jack Warner.
Another one.
Yeah. In 2006, they let him have more than 5,000 tickets to be resold via rackets. They were caught by auditor Ernst & Young, but FIFA's leaders cleared Warner and told his son and business partner Darian, now a cooperating witness with the FBI, not to do it again. And
oh, naughty boy, slappy wrists. Oh, yeah, right, okay.
4 years later, the brothers again agreed to supply Warner with tickets and resell into the black market.
So they did it again?
Yeah. Blatter could not claim ignorance, since email correspondence with Warner was copied to FIFA and a company called Infront, a sports marketing outfit run by Philippe Blatter, Sepp Blatter's nephew.
Okay, so FIFA, what's your verdict? Whiter than white or blacker than black and corrupt?
I think we'll go for the latter of those two.
Okay, thanks. Okay, also, the Major Projects Authority. Now, who are these people? I noticed that they've got a little feature about them in Private Eye.
Well, the Major Projects Authority, they give almost a traffic light system to the government projects, and basically red for it's going to fail, amber is could work, needs a bit of tweaking, green is go go go.
Okay, Major Projects Authority, I'd never heard of them. I mean, they're looking at things, I imagine.
They're a Tory watchdog. It says it audits big government schemes to help avoid wasting public money, downgraded Ian Duncan Smith's work program from green to amber,
not to red.
Not yet.
But,
this puts a big flashing warning over the struggling £460 million programme for the unemployed. The downgrade was actually announced at the end of last month, but actually took place last summer.
Oh, right. So they're keeping it secret whether these projects are actually being upgraded or downgraded or how many stars. I wonder how HS2 gets on in their little major projects rating.
It hasn't actually mentioned that. It just points out that the programme went from green rating, meaning successful, delivery appears highly likely, to amber, which means basically needs a bit of work.
Okay, so what are your thoughts, Jason, about this HS2? Whereabouts do you think? Green, amber, or red? What do you reckon? For the signals on the railway line?
Well, I think at the moment it's probably amber going red.
I think you're right. Red. Yeah, just can't afford it. It's a bit like the nuclear power station down at Hinkley. It just ain't the dosh to do it, however much they try and desperately do try. Okay, Nicole ruling, what's that about?
Yeah, this is quite a serious one from the courtroom. This is Mr. Justice Nicol, at the request of the state last month, ruled that courts could hold a major terrorism trial entirely in secret
for the
first time in modern British legal history.
Secret courts. Now, let's just get back to how this all started, which was with Kenneth Clark, actually, the steering committee member of Bilderberg, of course, also Lord Chancellor, also Secretary of State for Justice. What on earth was he up to?
Well, Lord only knows. But it says here it was so secretive, that decision, that Nicol gave his judgment and his order entirely in secret.
So we're going to have secret courts with people nabbed off the street. No one's even going to be allowed to know their name. And they'll be put in jail for nobody knows how long. And no one will even know they're there. That sounds to me like some sort of banana republic dictatorship.
Yep.
Any idea what the justification is for this, Jason?
Well, no, but it does make a very interesting point here. 30 years ago, one thrusting young barrister championed free speech in a book called Media Law. Does it really matter if a few cases go unreported? The young barrister said. And then he continued to say, yes, it does. The judge is a surrogate for the people, and people are entitled to see what power is exercised on their behalf. And who happened to be saying this? None other than Andrew Nicol.
All right. What a hypocrite. Maybe he should go to jail instead. Let me just give one example of this. Apparently the reason why these court cases have got to be held in secret is because it's national security.
And then when
you say, well, what part of national security? They say, we can't tell you.
I think in V for Vendetta they said, that's one for you, Mr. Dascom.
Ah, right. Yeah, that's a damn good film, isn't it? Anyway, okay, on to Thailand.
Thailand. Now, this one is... they have a correspondent in Bangkok. He's actually talking about the constitutional monarchy here. He says, the presence of khaki on the capital streets, martial music, and the return of our patriotic armed force to save us from ourselves, he's put in inverted brackets, a duty and tradition performed at least once every decade since they became a constitutional monarchy in 1932. He's talking about here about two different people on the streets there, after months of political upheaval. There's the people in yellow t-shirts supporting the ailing monarch, King Bhumibol Adulyadej, adopted to the Buddhist colour of the king's birthday to symbol their support for the country's wealthy elite. They held the streets of Bangkok for 6 months, aiming to end the influence of former Prime Minister and multimillionaire Thaksin Shinawatra. And it says, on the other hand, there's also red shirts, largely poor peasants, especially from Thailand's north and northeast. They supported Yingluck Shinawatra, Thaksin's younger sister, whose government convincingly won elections in 2011 and ruled for more than 2 years, until the yellow shirt street protest forced Parliament to be dissolved amid call for fresh elections. However, disruption by protesters prevented elections from happening in February. They're rescheduled for July, but the move will no longer take place as the army's chief has announced that an interim government will be installed and elections will not be held for another year.
Well, that's only between two people in the same family, apparently, they're looking at, and then it's not even going to happen at all.
It's not even people in the same family, because the two Shinawatras, they were supporting each other, effectively. So it's the difference between multimillionaire Shinawatra, who was corrupt and went to the queue, and his younger sister, who seemingly did a lot to support the poorer people, of course, after all. The largely poor peasants were supporting her. However, the people that support the country's wealthy elite have come across and said, we want different government, and the army has intervened.
Okay, so is it any good, do you think? What's going to happen in Thailand?
Well, it's hard to say. It says the only thing that's quite clear here is that the army's allegiance is clearly to the king. The former army general and current acting prime minister is the president of the king's privy council and effectively the power behind the throne.
Okay, that's Thailand for you. One more. We've got time for one more, and let's look at deaths in custody then. We have missed out HMRC and tax.
Because we do that all the time.
We do it almost every week. But anyway,
Scotland Yard was forced to U-turn last week by the family of Sean Rigg, the mentally ill musician who died in South London after being physically restrained by four Brixton police officers. It reversed the decision to allow one of the four to retire ahead of disciplinary action over allegations of misconduct, including assault, using excessive force, and failing to take into account Mr. Rigg's disability or the fact he was seriously ill. Facing legal action by the family, police chief suspended PC Andrew Burks on the eve of what would have been his planned retirement. White had agreed to his resignation when, following a series of high-profile scandals, there are moves to stop officers avoiding sanction by leaving the force, only the Met knows. PC Burks, the most senior Brixton officer involved in the fatal encounter, may challenge the U-turn via judicial review, but even if he is disciplined and found guilty of gross misconduct, serious questions remain about what sanction he may face.
Just finally, your thoughts about the football generally, who is going to win?
Well, I said it at the start, I think it's probably going to be Brazil.
You reckon? Because it's in Brazil.
It is in Brazil. And they've been statistically the most consistent team in the competition, and they also happen to be on home territory in this occasion.
Yeah, so you're driving around with Brazilian flags on your car, are you?
No. Well, I can't drive at the moment.
Okay, when you learn, you might. Okay. All right, Jason, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk.
And I'm joined by Elia Pablo again. Now, this time, Elia, we're going to try swapping roles. So, we were doing the tech slot, but you're going to be asking me some questions. What are you going to ask me about?
I'm going to ask you about Facebook and this new tool that is changing the way users are using the platform. So basically what, like for the spectators to know, basically what this new tool is doing is that users can choose which are their interests. They can see the list that Facebook has been collecting about themselves, their interests, their likes, the pages they like. And then they, from that list, they know which kind of advertisement do they like. And now the users can change it, can add more information, or can actually delete it. But now, what do you think
about this? Well, Facebook is always looking at the things that you're typing into Facebook, the things you're searching for on Facebook, the things you're liking on Facebook. It loves that because then it can sell that information to potential advertisers. If you say you like something, say, for example, it's something, maybe it's a political story, then it can get a gauge where your politics is. It can start to build up a picture of you. But anyway, Facebook is not satisfied being a sort of rather connected, as we found out, to the National Security Agency and GCHQ and these government spy agencies. They're not satisfied with just knowing what you're doing on Facebook. They also want to know what you're doing everywhere else. So anyway, this is a fascinating article by someone called Adrien LaFrance, and it's on theatlantic.com website in their technology section. It's the headlines, Facebook is expanding the way it tracks you and your data. Well, it sounds fairly innocuous, but the social giant is digging into information from your smartphone and tracking the other websites you visit. So even when you're not actually on Facebook and you're looking at something else, Facebook is still taking a great deal of interest in what you're up to. Now, for me and you, I think, Elia, we're getting a bit annoyed about the way that these internet companies are taking far too much of an interest in who we are and what we're doing. So anyway, what's the problem, or for your thoughts that you have with this?
Well, the thing is, some people can say this is good because we can actually manage the interest they have, like what do they want to know. And actually it's good to know, like to have some advertisement that we find interesting. On the other hand, the privacy advocates are saying that's completely against our protection and all these marketing rules.
They weren't marketing companies and all that marketing information that they can then sell on. I mean, of course, they're much more interested in what rich people are doing, but then they might also be interested in what politically active people are doing and sell that information to governments so that they can then control those politically active people and take a great deal of interest in them. Anyway, the story goes on. There's a key nugget buried in this morning's New York Times story about how Facebook is going to give its users the ability to see why certain ads are targeted to them. Starting this week, the New York Times reports, the company will tap data it already collects from people's smartphones and other websites they visit to improve its ad targeting. But this is the key bit. Users can opt out of this extended tracking, but they have to visit a special ad industry website and adjust their smartphone settings to do so. So they're going to have to open up their smartphone settings to the ad company if they want the ad company to track them less. Now, if you're going to do that, you know what you have to do? You have to enter in all your personal information if you want to tell them not to track you. So what they're giving you is virtually nothing.
Exactly. And my question to you, let's say if you can answer it, is how can we control the information the companies have about us through our online activities?
Well, I think in that case, the only thing I'd suggest is you put in a load of gobbledygook about yourself. So when the ad company is saying, who are you? If you're a male, you say, I'm female. You might want to keep your normal name, or you might want to say something like, you live on the other side of the world. If they're asking you what your income is, you might say something completely the opposite. Like if you're a poor, you can say, I'm a millionaire. So this, I think, is the only way to start actually polluting these databases of trackers to stop you being tracked, because it's slowly becoming clear that once you start getting into Google, Facebook, these big media companies that are very close to the NSA, they're sucking more and more information away from you. And the only way I can think of actually countering that is to start putting fake information out there about yourself.
Funny thing you said that, because a few weeks ago, I actually tried to change my name on Facebook. Just put my name, but like in a different way. And the website didn't allow me to say that's not my real name.
How do they know?
Because they know my real name is the one that I had for, I don't know how long I've been on Facebook, maybe 5 years. But they didn't actually allow me to just change my name.
Well, that's no good, is it?
Yes. What about the transparency? What would you say that? Because Facebook is saying this new tool is giving us the opportunity to see them, how they work in a more transparent way.
Yeah, but they're not, are they? Well, they're not doing anything transparent, more transparently at all, because they're trying to take more information from you in order to try and be a little bit more transparent about. I mean, what they're doing is obviously there's a bit of pressure being put on these marketing companies, and they're saying, well, okay, we will move, but only if we get even more information about you. So they're really taking the mickey, and it shows you just where people like Facebook and Google are coming from. Their alliances with the people with the money and the people that want to do marketing, and they are really there as a kind of front for these big marketing companies and for the government to just harvest information about you and to try and smile at your face while behind your back they're giving away your life.
So if someone asks you why the fact that I can choose what advertisement do I like, it's a bad thing for me, what would you say?
Well, that's actually quite a good thing, but they're saying you can only do that if you tell us more about yourself, which is not a good deal at all.
Well, apparently Facebook just says, oh, you can just go on the list and delete or add, or even you can delete everything. But then the advertisement you're going to receive is about, like, generic advertisement about trips and things like this. What do you think about
this? Well, that's good, but, I mean, I just don't trust them, I'm afraid. Don't trust them at all. If they say something smiling and wonderful and nice, I don't trust Facebook anymore.
I agree with you, and actually there is a new tool that I would like to talk about. Basically, it's like, I don't know if you know the mobile phone app called Shazam. You can just basically hear a song, and then the tool will download it, and you will get it to your smartphone. So basically, what this tool is doing, it's using the microphone from your smartphone. That means every time you're using Facebook from now on, your microphones are going to be turned on. What happened then? Everyone can spy on you. Kind of beneficial.
It's very good. Our whole lives are becoming transparent, pretty frightening stuff. Anyway, Elia, I don't know if I should thank you or you should thank me. But anyway, that's been a very interesting conversation. Thanks.
Thank you.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk.
One thing must stop if our government's to regain our respect and that of the rest of the world, and that is state-sanctioned torture. By keeping torture secret, the American and British governments think they can get away with it. But even with the recent revelations about extraordinary rendition, they've proved even why the government culprits haven't yet been jailed, that they can still get away with it. Whistleblowers cause massive problems for these criminals, though, and a great example from the 1980s is former CIA case officer John Stockwell. Here he is speaking on Alternative News magazine at the time.
A lot of people have been involved with the CIA over the years. Alternative Views News magazine.
We have with us tonight John Stockwell, the former CIA case officer who's back for an encore performance. We're going tonight to discuss the On Company Business, the documentary film that has been made recently about the CIA.
They love to brag inside the agency about the situations the CIA helped create that were so favorable to the United States. Now, what they talk about, the common denominator, is strong men they were able to put in power in key situations, and governments they were able to reverse.
The American Public Safety Mission chief, Dan Mitrione, was kidnapped and executed by the Tupamaros.
Mitrione was the small city cop in Richmond, Indiana. He had advanced to the position of chief of police and had heard about Byron Engel's program in Washington, applied, and of course he was exactly the sort of person they were looking for to send abroad. Diligent, hardworking.
Dan exemplified the highest principles of the police profession, that of social service. He served in Brazil for 7 years, at the International Police Academy in Washington for 2, and in Montevideo for 1. There are 250 million people in Latin America. In many of these countries, the communist terrorists are trying to tear the fabric of democracy apart. Some of these countries, Uruguay among them, realize that the best protection against this is the development of a democratic police and have asked the United States to help. And this is what Dan was doing in Uruguay.
He went to Uruguay to get information.
This is part of the testimony of Manuel Oevia of Uruguay. He said regarding Mitrione, this question of perfectionism, he insisted on an economy of effort
He used to say precise pain in the precise place at the precise time.
One of the pieces of equipment that had been found useful was a wire so very thin that it could be fitted into the mouth between the teeth, and by pressing against the gums increase the electrical charge. And it was through the diplomatic pouches that Mitrione got some of the equipment he needed for the interrogations, including these fine wires.
Several street beggars were picked up whose disappearance would attract no attention. This was a technique that Mitrione had developed, or rather perfected, in Brazil. Using these beggars, experiments were conducted with different forms of interrogation, letting the students see the effects of different voltages on different parts of the human body, male and female. All those unhappy people died without really knowing why they were undergoing this pain, without even having the cowardly solution of answering any questions, because they were not asked questions. They were simply guinea pigs.
Dan exemplified the highest principles of the police profession.
This callous murder emphasizes the essential inhumanity of the terrorist. The American people join the president in condemning this cold-blooded crime against a defenseless human being. Mr. Mitrione's devoted service to the cause of peaceful progress in an orderly world will remain as an example for free men everywhere.
You've seen this movie State of Siege that Costas Gavras made. Yves Montand plays Dan Mitrione, and shows the story of the Tupperaro guerrillas and the CIA operations in Uruguay and why they kidnapped him. Well, the U.S. media made Mitrione out a hero. Mm-hmm. They made him out a victim of irrational and despicable violence, whereas it appears from this documentary that Mitrione had his hands in some of the most savage butchery imaginable.
And the point is that we're not talking about a Gestapo officer in Auschwitz or somewhere experimenting on people or torturing people. We're talking about a fine, upstanding CIA officer doing his commission thing by the CIA.
A lot of these apparatuses of torture paid for by the American government and given to these people, produced in America, and they're even trained here how to use them. What's the CIA role in that school?
Yeah, the CIA set up several in the 50s and throughout the 60s, several what they call police training schools, and which included all of these techniques. They also had a school or two in the location. I never was in them. Teaching people how to make plastic bombs, how to blow up things, how to throw the Molotov cocktails into crowds and whatnot, how to destabilize a country. I don't know, I cannot testify that the CIA is still doing that now. The film on company business brings this out very well. I presume they are, but I don't know that.
John, this raises the question of sort of the balance sheet on the CIA. What is it accomplished? Has it produced useful intelligence? I mean, this is what the CIA is supposed to do in its charter. It's supposed to be a central intelligence agency. What sort of intelligence, political, military, and otherwise, has it produced? What's its record in terms of producing information for the American government to make intelligent political decisions?
Well, the Congressman Pike put together a committee and investigated the CIA's intelligence gathering capability, and he concluded in his own words that it was lousy. The list of CIA failures to gather accurate intelligence, to analyze it, digest it, and disseminate it to the leaders of the country accurately, what's going to happen, is a long list of incredible bungled failures, numerous ones of which have led this country to the brink of World War III. Time after time after time. Take a situation look at what the CIA did during it, and you'll find, if not the entire situation, at least major elements of it were inaccurately reported by the CIA in a way which screwed up our government's ability to react to the situation.
But John, what about just the gathering of information, of intelligence, as distinguished from the dirty tricks business, the going out, the overt, aggressive type of behavior?
The point is that secrecy doesn't work very well. Spies are the poorest source of intelligence that you can get anywhere. You're talking about it. Play gossip at the next time you have a party over with intelligent friends, and just start something verbally and let it come back around the room and see how it resembles what happened, what was said originally. The point is, it rarely does. When you get an agent who is reporting to you in secret, he is. You can't go with him to his office to see what was really said. He may be working for you. He may be working for you and his government to give you false information. He may be working for the Soviets to give you false information about his government. He may be a nut. He may be exaggerating. Stay on your payroll. And if you take 10 agents, 8 of them or 9 of them are going to be all of these things. And you'll be lucky to come up with one agent who is sort of true and honest and conscientious. And this is not Stockwell's lone criticism or sour grapes. Every case officer in the CIA, if they're speaking candidly, will tell you this. The first thing you do if you're a case officer and you get your notes from a good agent is you take out your blue pencil and you X out all of the things that you know to be false. And if you find some paragraph or thread in there that looks interesting, you put a big circle around it, and then you use that to type up an intelligence report. So you will screen out from your best agents reporting 80% of the stuff that he reports because you think it's false. Now, of course, if your basis of information is false, then you're feeding the government what it wants to know, or what you think will sell, or what you think your bosses will publish. Secrecy makes for lousy intelligence.
So that this good intelligence agency that would provide political intelligence on the Soviet Union, on different European or third world countries, what would it do as opposed to what the CIA does? In other words, how would you reform the intelligence agency?
Well, first, let's say, categorically and emphatically, in our national security interests, we close down the CIA's dirty tricks office completely. And I mean that in the coldest, most amoral terms of evaluation. If you don't care about the 300,000 people the CIA killed in the Third World, just in terms of U.S. national security, the CIA has gotten us into far, far more trouble than it's gotten us out of. By that I mean, Vietnam was a CIA operations for 7 years before it managed to get the presidency and the army involved, and the Bay of Pigs, and Angola, and Iran, and Nicaragua, and Cuba, and Chile, and Indonesia. The list is endless of situations where the CIA has gotten us in, and not the KGB, not our enemies, but the CIA has led us into these. The 18-year war against China, which made it almost impossible for well over 20 years for the United States to do business with this huge country.
And we almost got the decision made to drop atomic bombs in almost all these cases.
In almost all these cases, we were on the brink of World War III, of the Holocaust, because of CIA activities, not because of the KGB. Of these 300,000 victims of CIA operations, not any of them, of those countries, were actively involved in terrorism or war against the United States. China wasn't dropping parachutists into the United States to blow up our installations and kill people, nor was Cuba, nor was Angola, or any of these places. It was one-sided wars killing people. But in addition to that, only perhaps 6, maybe 10 people out of those 300,000 actually worked for the KGB. The CIA was not fighting the KGB. It was killing people in the Third World, and perhaps 5% of them at the most, and I doubt that seriously, were Communist Party members or communists. We were talking about 300,000 just dead people caught on the battlefield. Now, aside from all that, which is to say, close the Dirty Tricks division down, play to our strength, be public, tell the world what we believe in, and deal with them openly, and we would be far further ahead in our international affairs now than we are. But aside from that, what do you do about gathering intelligence? So you close the operations division down, and but you argue that the nation does need good intelligence in order to function. I fully agree. But intelligence gathered through covert sources, it produces a long history of failures, of corruption. You're in the chain of command from the president right down to you, and you're working for these people, and you're reporting on a situation about which they have an important policy. Like during the collapse of Vietnam, the Kissinger's policy was Vietnamization. It would succeed. We would give them arms and they would defend themselves. That was his policy. We were ordered not to report that Vietnamization was not working until one day suddenly the South collapsed, to everybody's surprise, except for the case officers that were there looking around at things to the right and the left.
And you were there at that time. You were a case officer.
I was there. Oh, yes, I was there upcountry in Vietnam. If we had had public debate, the intelligence gathered in a more open way and shared with the academic community and the world, we would have had the failure, the collapse of Iran, for example, the famous case where the CIA had in its typewriters the reports that concluded that there was no serious opposition to the Shah in Iran. It was in the typewriters the same weekend that Tehran first fell apart in the country. And that was for the same reason. You were not permitted to report that the Shah was a monster and that our policy and our relationship with Iran was fallacious and that the Shah was bankrupt in his own country.
John, do you think that the CIA is even capable in its present organization and with its present members, do you think it's even capable of providing intelligence if they have the sort of James Bond mentality or the covert operations mentality? Are these types of people even capable of getting intelligence that's not bungled up? In other words, if you're into playing spy, chances are you're going to have a bizarre view of the world and you're going to be incapable of getting rational, objective intelligence. And secondly, you're going to have difficulty cultivating sources who are going to be reliable.
I fully agree, and that gets down to the very core of my point, my argument, that the CIA should be closed down in our national security interest. The managers of the CIA are activists. They're trained to do things, to take action. They enjoy it. It's exciting to mount a war and to sit in Washington and send people over to fight. It excites a certain kind of person, and that kind of person is the one that gravitates to the top of organizations like that. And those individuals are going to seek information and favor people who report information that creates a hostile, adversary situation in the world, so they will have excuses to continue doing their thing.
John, let me ask you this. It ties in a lot of the things which we were talking about. It seems that the Rockefellers, David Rockefeller and the Chase Manhattan Bank, the Rothschilds, who are the Rockefeller counterparts in France, and the crime syndicate, as represented by Resorts International, and the, let's see, who's the big man, the head of the mafia? Oh, his name escapes me.
Meyer Lansky?
Yeah, right, Meyer Lansky. They invested in an organization, all three of them, the underworld and the overworld, right? They invested in an organization which provides security service and intelligence service for anybody who will hire it. They hired ex-CIA people. They hired people from Interpol, National Security Agency, from the FBI. They hired an ex-Air Force general whose main job was security. They hired an ex-district attorney whose main job it was to investigate and ferret out and to prosecute the crime syndicate. And they also have ties through the Rothschilds with Mossad. Now, to me, this is the outline. Don't know, I haven't heard anything about it since then, but this seems to me the outlines of a monstrous organization where you tie all of these together.
Isn't this one of the things wrong with secret intelligence agencies is that it feeds right-wing paramilitary groups? There's a lot of private intelligence operating companies that do sort of dirty work for corporations, industrial spying and probably worse, who are often former CIA or FBI agencies. So it just creates a climate and operations and practices in society that are anti-democratic and are dangerous.
There's another article in Penthouse talking about the EPIC, which is El Paso Information Center. It's run by the Drug Enforcement Agency, and it has inputs from all of the police and intelligence organizations from all over the country, including an interface into Interpol. This is a result of Nixon's decision several years ago that all the intelligence agencies should provide information to the Drug Enforcement Agency. So they have computers now that bring in all this information from their information banks into this area. So raw data, unsubstantiated, unevaluated, it goes into the computer. So anybody can be tabbed by them, and this is another area where the intelligence with the CIA is creeping into, out of the CIA and into the rest of our lives. A small thing perhaps, but an ex-CIA agent who was involved in these cop training programs, torture places, just been made head of the New Mexico prison where they had the uprising a while back. But you see it more and more.
Well, John, thanks a lot for coming on our program again.
Let's move now from 1980 to 1987 and check out some news stories about the subject we've been talking about.
Every month or so, I get a publication from Amnesty International, since I'm a member. It's called, appropriately enough, Amnesty Action. I guess it's just a newsletter of some sort. And they give a rundown on who's being tortured in the world. They have one particular section I always look at. It gives a rundown on Central America and what's going on down there, and I'd like to read you a little bit of it. I think it's interesting. For instance, in Brazil, their new civilian government is introducing measures to protect human rights, although Amnesty continues to receive reports of torture and killings in that country. And Argentine government is proceeding with trials against 9 military commanders for the disappearances that occurred between 76 and 82. And efforts there are continuing to find 100 children that are still missing that disappeared during this reign. They say also arbitrary arrest, torture, and killings by Guatemalan and Salvadoran military and paramilitary forces appear to be more selectively directed against suspected government opponents last year. This is more so than in previous years. And both governments are also targeting trade unionists and human rights workers for oppression. In Honduras, opposition forces reportedly torture and assassinate their citizens there. Amnesty cites indications that the United States' assistance to these forces encourages or condones these abuses. In Colombia, there's increased disappearances and political killings by government agencies. And there's a steep rise in abductions and killings in Chile. And they go on to say that in Mexico there's also a number of documented cases. The thing that's interesting about this is that they also mention Nicaragua. This is the Amnesty International, remember. And the only thing they say about Nicaragua is, quote, Amnesty's concerns in Nicaragua focused on short-term detention of prisoners of conscience. So no matter what the Reagan administration tells you, the people who are really in the business of documenting torture tell it completely different.
On September 8th of 1985, the White House asked Congress for $54 million to counter the terrorist threats, to start this business all over again of training and supervising the Central American police and army forces, same thing that they were stopped from doing a few years ago. But the administration says that likes this program so much, they plan to make it a global one so it'll serve as a model in the worldwide fight against terrorism.
Speaking of state-sponsored terrorism and torture, there was a report just released today by the America's Watch Group, which is a New York-based civil rights organization, that indicated that the Contras have one of the worst records in the world for civil liberties violations. According to this 170-page report that was just released, the conduct of the military conflict, particularly by the insurgent forces, which are the Contras, continued to have a severe severe impact on the rural civilians in Nicaragua. Violations of the law of armed conflicts by the Contras caused great suffering to the Nicaraguan people. At a news conference releasing the report, their chairman, Ira Nair, said that the Contras still engage in selective but systematic killing of persons they perceive as representing the government, in indiscriminate attacks against civilians or in disregard for their safety, and in outrages against the personal dignity of prisoners. One of the worst things that the Contras have been doing is setting landmines. And I just saw on C-SPAN an interview with Elliot Abrams, who's the Assistant Secretary of State in charge of Central America. And he was claiming that the Contra landmines are only set off by remote control and only are targeted against military targets, but that they've made a few mistakes. Whereas I've read report after report that was confirmed in this America Watch report that indiscriminately they put landmines all over different rural areas of Nicaragua, that whoever goes over them, civilian, military, innocent tourist, is going to get blown up, and that that's part of a policy of systematic terrorism by the Contras that have been denounced in this America Watch. And Craig, just like Amnesty International, they said that the Nicaraguan government had not engaged in any systematic violation of civil liberties, that they'd been somewhat rough in their interrogation activities of people suspected of aiding the Contras, but that there was no evidence of torture or murder of any political prisoners. And they say that the Nicaraguans in this report, the Nicaraguan Sandinista government, has improved in recent years in their civil rights record, particularly as they've treated the Mosquito Indians, who at one time were subject to government repression, but now have been treated better in recent years by the Sandinista government. Whereas the America's Watch report concluded that the Contras were becoming worse in their violation of civil liberties.
And that was Alternative Views for this evening. Alternative Views is a production of the Alternative Information Network, P.O. Box 7279, Austin, Texas, 78713.
That was former CIA case officer John Stockwell there, relating his experiences of working within the American intelligence services. Sounds like they picked up pretty much where the Nazis left off, doesn't it?
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk.
Jeff Sparks with the What's On Guide.
Thank you, Tony. This is a What's On Guide from Dialect. Starting with Thursday, 26th of June, there is a Rick Mail tribute night at the Fleece in St. Thomas Street, Bristol. On the giant screen, there will be Kevin Turvey Investigates, The Young Ones, Comic Strip Presents, and Bottom. Entry is free and doors open at 7 p.m. On Saturday, 28th of June, Rough Justice will be performing at the Reckless Engineer in Temple Gate, Bristol. Entry is free and the gig starts around 9:30 p.m. On to Song of the Week, I present Hawkwind. This group formed in London, England in 1969 and disbanded in 1978. The following year they reformed and are still performing and recording to this day. This is from the 1975 released album Warrior on the Edge of Time and is the track Motorhead.
Yeah.
was Hawkwind with Motorhead from the album Warrior on the Edge of Time. For more information on them, you can check out www.hawkwind.com. Keeping with Saturday 28th of June, Larry Miller will be performing with support from Antidote at the Tunnels in Bristol and Exeter Mews, Bristol. Tickets are £12 in advance and doors open at 7:30pm. Finally, on Sunday 29th of June, A Tale of Two Cities will be performing with support from White Lion Parade and also ours at the Exchange in Old Market, Bristol. Tickets are £5 in advance and doors open at 7:30pm. That's all from me. Thanks for listening and have a good week. Take care and goodbye.
That's all for this week. Dialect is Bristol's first weekly MP3 podcast and is on Bristol Community FM 93.2 at 11am every Thursday morning. If you're online, you can subscribe to our emails or download the podcast from dialectradio1word.co.uk. Thanks to our guests, Jason Yannakopoulos, Elia Pablo, John Stockwell, and also to Jeff Sparks and studio engineer Dave Bazanko. Dialect's a Bristol Broadband Co-op production, and anyone can contribute. If you'd like to, contact us through Volunteering Bristol on 0117 989 7733 or at bristolvolunteers.org.uk. So, that was Dialect, and I'm Tony Gosling, wishing you a very good week. Thanks for listening. Till the same time next week, goodbye for now.
Power belongs in the hands of people.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. We know things are bad, worse than bad.
Bad.
They're crazy, 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 crazy.
10 seconds to commercial.
Sometimes extreme behavior can be the warning sign of a mental illness. Learn to see the sickness.
The President of the United States!
Regrettably, we now believe that only force will make him leave.
The sickness.
Regrettably,
bloodshed.
We now believe
strife.
That only force
riot.
Will make him leave.
Right!
I am certain our cause is just, a gallon of gas. And I am certain our cause is moral, loss of life. And I am certain our cause is right.
Give me the goddamn money. A new world order.
I don't know.
Again.
I'm from the United States of Kiss My Ass.
Stupidity.
Again.
Demonstrations of this kind are demoralizing the whole country.
Corruption.
Again.
Don't hate the media. Become the media.
It's up to you.
Choice.
It's up to you.
Change the world.
It's up to you.
Please do your part.
We want to know what the truth is.
Television is not the truth. Television is a goddamn amusement park.
Regrettably, we now believe that only force will make him leave. Regrettably,
hey!
We now believe that only force will make him leave.
The protesters are a tiny but vocal minority.
Well,
the American people overwhelmingly support the President of the United States.
Gentlemen, how do you feel?
Bum, you get a job.
Oh, yeah.
is a time when the operation of the machine becomes so obvious, makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Yeah! It's the right thing to do.
It's up to you.
What's it?
It's the right thing to do.
It's up to you.
How do you feel?
It's the right thing to do.
It's up to you.
It's the right thing to do.
It's up to you.
Let me tell you what it is.
Power.
It's up to you.
You.
Up to you.
Choice.
It's up to you.
Up to you.
You.
Change the world.
It's up to you.
Up to you.
Power!
Do what's right.
It's up to you.
You.
One more time.
Power.
It's up to you.
It's the right thing to do.
What's it?
Choice.
It's up to you.
It's the right thing to do.
How do you feel?
Change the world.
It's up to you.
It's the right thing to do. Do what's right.
It's up to you.
It's the right thing to do.
Oh, yeah.
What a group of kids we've sent out into the world.